There are all kinds of forums at Holden Village. This one is a joke. Sometimes we get together to simply laugh. Occasionally it takes a while to get started and get a few jokes going. Sometimes they start right off, but they always end well. There isn't a whole lot to be said. We just welcome folks to share a joke or more that they know. I can't see everybody up in the balcony, so I see a few legs out there and occasionally some faces and arms over there. But you folks in the balcony, just speak up. Don't try to wave a hand or some such. Just jump right in, and that'll go for us down here as well. So we just start. Who's got a joke to tell? Some folks are laughing already, and we haven't even heard. Ed, start out with one.
I don't know whether ethnic jokes are in, but I went to a conference recently, and the pastor got up and said that their bishop had said it was inappropriate in this day with so many different nationalities to tell jokes of ethnic humor. So he said they went back and they researched and they found out that there are no Hittites alive anymore in the world. Went back and checked with the bishop and he said, it's okay, it's quite all right if you tell Hittite stories. So now I'd like to tell you a story about a couple of Hittites, Sven and Oli. Seems Sven and Oli were out hunting one day, and they had gone a long, long ways, and they shot an elk. And they were so excited, and they knew that they had a long ways to go back to camp, so they each got on one on either side, and they grabbed the horns, and they started dragging it back to the camp, but the horns got in the way. They'd stick in the ground, and they'd catch in the brush, and they'd stick them in the stomach and whatever, and they were having an awful time. And this man happened to walk by and he said, hey, you know, it would be a lot easier if each of you grabbed a hind leg and pulled it that way. It works so much easier. So they tried that and they were going along and Sven said, Oli, he says, you know, that man was right. And Oli says, yeah, but we seem to be getting further from the car.
It's funny you should say that, Ed, because I have a Hittite joke. This is actually one of Wes Preeb's, and I should give him the blame for it. It seems that the farmer had a problem with skunks under the porch. And so he checked with his neighbor, and the neighbor suggested that he toss some lutefisk under there. That would get rid of the skunks. And so neighbor was passing by a week later, and so he stopped in and said, well, did it work? Lutefisk take care of the skunks? He said, yeah, but now I've got a family of Norwegian Hittites. I guess. Who's next? You need some more jokes.
I have a story about Sven and Oli. I usually tell it with a Jewish accent, so far. Sven and Oli. Oli called Sven and he said, Oli, we got a problem. We got a bad problem. You know how we always take the new pastor fishing? He said, yeah, Sven, we always say that. Well, it's a problem. Well, it's a woman pastor.
Oh, Oli, you got a problem?
Well, we better do it. They say we discriminate otherwise. So they got at the boat, they got the pastor, they go fishing. They get out in the lake and the wind starts blowing and the waves rise up. And so the pastor says, fellas, I hope you don't mind, but I really think I need to get my jacket. And he goes to the shore and they said, oh, that's right, pastor, we row you in. Oh, no, that's fine, fellas, I'll get it myself. So she gets out of the boat and walks across the water and goes and gets her jacket and walks back to the boat and gets in the boat. And Sven says, Oli, we got a problem. What is it, Sven? Well, not only do we have a woman pastor, but she can't swim.
yard in town. And he asked Sven, the dealer, he says, I want to buy some 2x4s. And Sven says, how long do you want them? He says, quite a while, I'm building a garage.
Sven went to the church council meeting one night, hadn't been there for quite a while, and they were selecting delegates for the national convention. And they had elected the delegates, and they needed an alternate. And Sven got elected, and he was really pleased because he had never had an honor like this before. So after the meeting, he went running home to tell his wife, Anna, and she had already gone to bed. So he ran upstairs, jumped into bed, and shook her, and he says, Anna, Anna, do you realize you are sleeping with the substitute?
They were talking to each other and rode right off the bridge into the river. And Sven and Ole got out and swam to the top, but the Finns died drowned because he couldn't get the tailgate open.
In this day and age, there are some very positive signs that we see. And that is that some of the ethnic and some of the cultural and some of the national differences and conflicts are subsiding. But it can sometimes be a bit confusing for some of us in the process, and we have difficulty really in knowing who we are at times. Sven and Ole are two drinking friends from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan in Canada. And one day Sven found himself in Fargo, North Dakota on business. So he was in the bar that evening, and he sat down beside a native Indian. The Indian says to him, I'll tell you a riddle, and if you can guess it, then I'll buy you the drinks. If you don't guess it, then I'll buy the drinks. Or you'll buy the drinks, sorry. And so Sven says, sounds fair to me. So the Indian says to him, my father and my mother had one child. It wasn't my brother, and it wasn't my sister. Who was it? Sven thought, and he thought for a while. He said, beats me, I'm stumped. The Indian says, well, it was me. Yeah, that's a good one, says Sven. So the next week, when he was back home again, he says, he was in the bar with Ole, he says, Ole, I've got a new joke, he says, I'll tell you a riddle, and if you guess it, I buy the drinks, and if you don't guess it, then you buy the drinks. Sounds fair to me, says Ole. Sven says, my father and my mother, they had one child. It wasn't my brother, and it wasn't my sister. Who was it? So Ole thinks, and he thinks, and he says, beats me, I'm stumped. Ha ha, I got you, says Sven. It was an Indian from Fargo, North Dakota.
Midwest, Northwest, do it either, but anyway, the straw stack bit. So he got his feet all tangled up in this thing and tried to get up and go again, and he'd fall and having a terrible time. So he finally decided that, well, it's obvious that I'm not going to get across this thing, so I might as well spend the night here. So he kicked himself sort of a little hollow and decided I'll make my bed here. In doing that, he felt as if there was somebody else down there. So he says, "Here, descend." Snosh, snosh, snosh. He's not too many sweets,
Well, Sven and Ollie were going to a picnic, and as they're going to the picnic, they see two Norwegians out in the boat in the middle of a wheat field. Sven says to Ollie, "What do you think those two Norwegians are doing in the wheat field in the rowboat fishing?" He says, "I don't know." So, okay, so they go to the picnic, and when they're coming back, they see the two Norwegians, and they're still there. Sven says to Ollie, "Well, why don't we go see if we can see what they're doing while we go out there?" And Ollie says, "Well, don't you think we need a rowboat first?"
Anybody got a joke that isn't about Sven and Ollie?
He was out in the water, and he was going down a little farther and farther, so they threw him a lifeboat, and he said, "No, God will save me," and so he kept going down a little further and a little further, and a boat came along, and they were going to pick him up, and he said, "No, God will save me," and so he went all the way, you know, quite a ways down, and a helicopter came along, and he said, no, he said, "God will save me." Well, he went all the way down. He got to St. Peter's, and he said, "Hey, what happened?" He said, "I thought you were going to save me." And he said, "Yeah, that's what I'd like to know. But I sent out a preserver, I sent out a lifeboat, and I sent out a helicopter. What more do you want?"
My three friends here, Dick and Harvey, and is it Jim? And Jim were taking the Holden bus down to Lucerne one day, and the bus driver didn't make a corner. Over they went. Pretty soon, here they were in heaven. St. Peter said, "Well, before you can get into heaven," he said, "you'll each have to take a number here. You go in that room, and then God will tell you what you have to do." So Jim took a number, and he went in the first room. And there was this lady in there, and she was about 70 years old, and she was just as ugly as sin. And God said, "Now, for your sins, you have to spend a week with this woman so you can get into heaven." I said, "Oh, no." So Harvey took a number, and he went in the next room. Here was this lady. She must have weighed 450 pounds. She was just as homely as could be. And he said, "God said, for your past sins," he says, "you have to spend 2 weeks with this woman before you can get into heaven." So Dick went into the next room. He drew his number and went in. And he walked in. Here was Dolly Parton standing there. "Oh, boy." And God said, "Dolly Parton, for your sin."
Moving across the continent to France, you've all heard of Quasimodo and Notre Dame. Quasimodo had been ringing that bell for, nigh on to 75 years, and he'd never had a vacation. And he was really getting tired, and so they advertised for somebody to take his place. for 2 weeks so he could take a trip down to the Riviera and have some good times. And so this fella answered the ad, and the fella didn't have any arms. And they said, well, how are you going to be able to ring that bell? And he says, don't worry about it. He says, I can handle it now. I said, well, can you show us? So they went up to the bell tower, and Quasimodo was standing there watching, and then this guy with no arms, he ran right to that bell, and he ran right into that thing, and then when it was, then it dropped. He said, the bell just rang, he hit it right with his face, and then he ran over to another bell and smashed right into that with his face, and boy, the bell rang again, and he did this 3 or 4 times, and Quasimodo was pretty impressed when all of a sudden the guy tripped and fell out the bell tower and went down all the way down and flat on the ground. And boy, a crowd gathered around, and the police came, and they were asking questions, and he said, does anybody know this guy's name? And everybody looked at him and said, I don't know his name, but his face sure rings the bell. Whereupon his brother applied for the job. His twin brother, who had art. And he came up and he rang the bell and the same thing, and everybody was very impressed when he tripped and out he went, and the same thing, splat on the ground, and the crowd gathered around, and the police came and they looked, and said, anybody know this fella's name? And he's a dead ringer for his brother.
How do you sell a duck to a deaf man?
Will you buy a duck?
Thank you.
to a Midwestern town one wintry day, and he came to the church, and lo and behold, it was only the custodian and he there because of a raging storm. Being his first parish and so on, he was a little bit nervous as to really what his responsibilities were in such an instance. So after some considerable thought of this, he finally went back to the janitor and asked him, what should he do? Are you prepared to listen to my sermon, or should we just call it off today? Well, Parson, he said, you know, if I've got a cow out on the hills there and she's starving to death, I'd feed her. So the pastor contemplated for a few seconds and took his inspiration from this, and he thought, well, okay. So he went and put his vestments on and total order of liturgical service and a half-hour sermon, and he finally closed with the benediction and the amen, threefold amen, and then went to the back to shake hands with the listener. Janitor comes up to him and says, you know, Parson, I'd feed her, but I'm not sure I'd give her the whole load.
Hearing the delightful accents of our Canadian brethren reminds me of the story of Sven and Ole taking a train trip, and they went up into Canada to in Saskatchewan, and they stopped at this town, and Ole says, where are we? And Sven says, I don't know, I'll get off and ask one of the people standing here on the platform. So he got off and he said, where are we? And the guy said, Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. And he got back on, he said, I told you we weren't where they could speak English.
Heard about what happened to Ole when he was gone. He will join the Irish Republican Army. He wants to be, well, he's going to be a terrorist, but he washed out. It was because they sent him to blow up a bus and he burned his mouth on the exhaust pipe.
My husband is a law enforcement person, and he told me that I should be very careful because if I didn't say the right things at the border, there is this matron who takes you to a room and asks you to take all your clothes off, and she searches you. And so I was really nervous the first time I went over, and I knew you had to say just the right thing, or you know, the jig was up. And so I thought I said everything right, and the Canadian border patrolman said, "Off with you!" And I figured that was it. I said, "Well, what room do I go to?"
That bus joke reminded me of a couple of old proverbs. One is, one who runs in front of a bus gets tired. One who runs behind a bus gets exhausted.
Said to him, you know, what are you? And so finally we were pulled up to if I say I'm a Protestant, I'm going to get shocked as a guy's going to be Catholic. And so if I say I'm Catholic, I'm going to get shocked as a guy's going to be Protestant. And I don't know what I'm going to do. So he says, well, I'm Jewish. So the guy shoots him and runs away and says, I must be the luckiest Arab in Belfast.
Speaking of Africa, there was a lion going down a jungle path one day in Africa, and he came up to a zebra, and he said, who is the king of the jungle? And the doctor says, well, you are. He says, that's right, just keep that in mind. So he walked down the path a little further, and he came to a gorilla. And he said, and who is the king of the jungle? And the gorilla says, well, you are. And he says, that's right, just keep that in mind. Walked on a little bit further, and he came up to an elephant. And he says, who is the king of the jungle? The elephant picked him up with his trunk, and he slammed him down into the dirt. Lion kind of shook his head, and he got up again, and he walked back up to the elephant, and he says, who is the king of the jungle? Elephant picked him up again, and he slammed him down in the dirt. Got back up, and he shook himself, and he says, just because you don't know the answer, you don't have to get mad.
A few weeks ago, my wife and I were sitting in a tavern in Ballard, which is a Norwegian part of Seattle, and there were a couple of Norwegian fishermen that had come in, and they were sitting at the next table, and there was a Swedish entertainer. He was playing some music on his accordion, and it was terrible music, but he also had a little monkey that had a little can. The monkey was dressed up in a very cute little suit, and the monkey would, after he had played a song on his accordion, the monkey would go around with the little can, and people would put coins in. The monkey came around to the two Norwegians, and one of them took out a $5 bill and he folded it up and stuffed it in, and Knut said, Arvid, what in the world did you give him all that money for? His music was terrible. And Arvid said, yeah, I know, Knut, man. Those Swedes are so cute, nor they are little.
And from the balcony here.
Have you heard about the pharmaceutical company in Philadelphia that's now using Norwegians for their experiments, not rats? They multiply faster, and you don't get so attached to them. If we're really going to be mean about the Norwegian student, you know what happened? The big tragedy in Oslo one year was the Norwegians that got caught on the escalator in the department store when the electricity went off. They were trapped for hours.
This German farmer by the name of Scholz, he came over from the old country, and he came to Wisconsin, and like the Germans, he started growing potatoes. He became a large, potato farmer, but he always used the hard method of harvesting his potatoes. He would always dig them by hand, the way he had always been taught. So one day the pastor came by the farm and saw this Scholz digging potatoes by hand. So he went over to him and he said, we have here in America, we have modern equipment for digging potatoes. You have shovels and we have potato diggers and other methods. Why don't you investigate some other way of digging your potatoes? So Schultz said, no, no, I must do it the hard way. So the pastor said, well, do you have anything to drink? I'm very thirsty. So the farmer Schultz, he took the pastor over to his farmhouse close by, and he had a big well, deep well in the farmland by the house. So he took a long ladder and he put it down into the well, and he took a pail and went down into the well and picked the pail up and got the water and came up and offered the pastor some water. And the pastor said, you know, Schultz, don't you know that you could put a rigging on the top of the well and you could bring up the water much easier? And Schultz said, no, no, I've always been told I must do the things the hard way. So all of a sudden, one little kid came running by. And the pastor said, you know, Schultz, is that your little son? And Schultz said, yeah, that's my son. And the pastor then asked him, I said, how did you come by that little son the hard way also? And the Schultz, he looked at the pastor and he says, yeah, my wife and I, we were fooling around in the hammock. That's a, that happens to be a Skid Row joke.
Went over to his friend's house. He just arrived in the country, never been to a baseball game before, so I went over to this Norwegian friend of his and asked him, well, what'd you do at a baseball game? And the Norwegian said, and I kind of got a twinkle in his eye and said, well, what you do is you go in there and you buy a hamburger, a hot dog, all kinds of soft drinks and candy bars, and then you sit down and you watch the game. So Swede goes and he gets all those things and sits down and watching the game and eating all this stuff. And I think I already blew it, that's it. Anyway, so he's sitting there and all of a sudden he hears up in the back someone yell, hey Joe, and he puts down all his stuff and kind of looks back, shrugs his shoulders and picks up all the stuff and watches the game. A few more innings go by, same thing happens. Looks back, a few more days go by, the same thing happens. Finally, he just puts in all the stuff and he looks up there, has the guy yell, hey Joe, and says, I don't know who you are, but my name's not Joe. That was a sweet thing.
Well, Ollie went to Texas to go visit his American cousin, Joe Smith. And so Ollie goes over there and they're arguing about who knows more famous people. And Joe Smith says, hey, I know everybody famous. Yeah, I know President Reagan. And Ollie says, no. He says, yeah, I do. He says, watch, I'll prove it to you. So they go to the Capitol and he walks up the steps and says, now watch this, Ollie. And they walk up to the White House and there's Ronald Reagan coming down the steps and says, hey, look, it's Joe Smith from Texas. And they shake hands and Ollie says, hey, I guess you really do know him. And he says, but you don't know anybody other than that. I mean, maybe they're really famous. So I bet you don't know Churchill. And this was a while back, so they go off and they go over to England. They go up to number 10 Downing Street and knocks on the door, out comes Churchill, or Margaret Thatcher now would be, and says, hey, it's Joe Smith from Texas. So they talk for a minute, and then they went aside, and Ollie said, hey, I guess you do know a lot of people, but I bet there's somebody you really don't know. He says, who's that? He says, you don't know the Pope. He says, you know something? I really do, and I can prove it to you. So they go to the Vatican, and Joe Smith turns to Ollie, and he says, now, in a few minutes, Pope's gonna come out on that balcony, and I'll be in white next to him. And when you see me up there with the Pope, you can grab one of the guys screaming and hollering next to you and ask him who that is. And he'll tell you that's the Pope. So he goes up there and he goes inside. And a few minutes, the Vatican courtyard there fills up with people, and out comes the Pope, and they're all screaming and hollering, and right next to him is Joe Smith, and so Ollie looks, and he grabs his friend next to him, and he says, "Who is that? Who is that?" And he says, "I don't know, but the guy next to him is Joe Smith from Texas."
We heard recently from a Scotsman who was telling us about they have a reputation for being a little bit tight-fisted with the dollar. There was a ship going across the Atlantic, and on Sunday morning there were no pastors on board, so the captain, since it was his by his authority, decided to have a church service. And during the service, he announced that there was going to be a collection taken and that all of the money would be given to the widows of seamen that had died in the line of duty. So he asked everyone to be very, very generous with their giving. And he said, just before the benediction, we will announce how much money has been collected. So they had the collection, and he was very pleased. He says, we have a tremendous offering here. He said, we collected $6,000.04. He says, there must be a Scotsman on board. And a voice from the back said, "Aye, there are four of us."
What happens if you cross a cat with a lemon?
What?
You get a sour puss.
You know what the three happiest years are in a Norwegian boy's life? The ones he spends in the second grade.
I came a little late, so I don't know if you got the definition of lutefisk. The definition of lutefisk? Famous Norwegian dish called lutefisk, and it's defined as the piece of cod which passeth all understanding.
What about the funniest thing that ever happened to you? We had one true story. That's another way to go. I want to tell one that isn't on me, but it's a friend of mine who went to Yale before it was co-ed. And so once in a while, the fraternity that he belonged to invited a sorority from one of the schools down, and they would reserve the banquet table down at Maury's, and they'd have a banquet and a dance afterwards. And he was sitting there with this date, and it was the first time he had dated this young woman. And he got a signal from one of his fraternity brothers that something was awry, and he finally decided that his fly had been left open. So as discreetly as he could, he zipped it up. Banquet went on. It was over. He got up and he backed away from the table and pulled all of the china.
I have an awful time remembering names. I remember faces, but names, you just have to know people a long time to be able to remember them. One day I was shopping at a nearby shopping center with my wife, and I saw my secretary coming towards us, And with her was the secretary that had the next office. I can remember my secretary's first name, but not her last name. And the other woman could not remember the names at all. And I was embarrassed and thought, what am I going to do? So I had an inspiration. I thought, when they get up to us, I'll introduce my wife to them and then hesitate. And then, you know, maybe they'll jump in and introduce themselves. So they got up and I said, hi, I'd like to have you meet my wife.
I'm a mortician by trade, and I thought this was rather a humorous incident. During the local fair days in our hometown, we quite often have chuck wagon races with the evening performance. And believe it or not, one morning when they came down to the office, I was sweeping my sidewalk and so forth, and one of the fellows that evidently had a chuck wagon, he came up to me and of course did not know me, and he says, pardon me, sir, but could you tell me what to do with a dead horse? One of his horses had died the night before he comes to me. I did as far as directing it where to go.
Norm Tice tells a story about himself, so I can pass it on. He was in the village a while back. He's a pastor of a church in Washington, D.C. And two things happened over the course of the years. One time he was conducting a funeral service, and your remark brought that to mind. And he kept using the name of a person in the congregation who wasn't yet deceased. The other time was he was conducting a wedding ceremony and he had the bride's former boyfriend named instead of the groom.
I had a similar experience. I had two weddings in sequence there, and the second wedding I kept referring to the bride for the bride of the former wedding. And I wouldn't believe it, but it just happened that, you know, they told me about that, but that wedding was recorded in some of the tape.
I remember hearing a wedding story on a young pastor who was performing his first wedding, and it was a summer evening, and the windows were open in the sanctuary, and he was performing the service and he lost his place in the wedding service, and so he turned to the congregation and said, let us rise and pray. And then he turned to the altar and he found his place again, and so he just turned around and said, wait a minute, let's not.
We had a pastor who served a number of years in Africa, and when they first arrived, he left to go to the church one day, and shortly came running back into the house, and he told his wife, he said, honey, you'll never guess what I saw. He said, I just went outside, and there I spotted a leopard. One of the kids looked and said to the mother and said, I thought they were born that way.
The pastor was driving down the roadway and hits a rabbit. Looking in his rear view mirror, it was evident that he had killed it, and he was rather ashamed of his deed, and his conscience got the better of him, and he decided that while seeing us, I've killed the poor animal, I should at least be decent enough to go back and throw it in the ditch so it doesn't get smashed on the road still more. So he turned around and headed back, and as he was in the process of picking the rabbit up, and so far, here came a Roman Catholic priest by. And he stopped and asked what was going on. Well, the Lutheran man told him that I'd hit this rabbit, and I thought I might as well do a little bit more to it and at least throw it in the ditch to get it off the road. Well, said the good father, if that's what you're going to do, we might as well go all the way and perform the last rites. So father took this little water bottle out and crossed it and said a few magic words, and lo and behold, the rabbit's nose began to twitch. And this Lutheran pastor just shook his head and stood in awe, and the priest sprinkled it again and said some more magic words, and pretty soon his ears started to move. And this Lutheran minister was just awestruck. He thought this was really something, and father sprinkled it again and crossed it and said the magic words, and the rabbit got up and down the ditch and underneath the fence and out across the field at 60 miles per. Good heavens, father, says the Lutheran man. Talk about powerful holy water. Holy water, says the priest, that's hair restorer.
Receding hairline?
Yep.
There was a little Catholic boy, and he wanted a bicycle in the worst way, so he decided he'd go straight to the top and he would write a letter to Jesus. So he's writing his letter, "Dear Jesus, if I could just have a bicycle, I promise I'll never fight with my sister again." No, I can't really say that, and tears it up. "Dear Jesus, I promise I'll do all my chores if I could just have..." No, I can't really say that either. So he's walking around the house, goes by his mom and dad's room, and there's a statue of the Virgin Mary. And he gets an idea, and he grabs the statue off the shelf, and he runs in his room, and he puts it under the mattress. "Dear Jesus, if you ever want to see your mother again..."
There was a Catholic priest and a rabbi and a Protestant clergyman. They were sitting debating about when life begins. And the Catholic priest, he says, "Well, from my point of view, life begins at conception." The rabbi says, "Well, I believe that life begins at the time of birth." And the Protestant clergyman, he leans back, puts his feet up, and he says, "For me, life begins when the dog dies and the kids sleep home."
There was this little kid, and he was walking around the streets yelling, "The Sweets have all the apartments! The Sweets have all the apartments!" And this priest heard him across the street, and he ran up to him and said, "But a boy, you shouldn't say that kind of thing." He said, "If you want to yell something nice, get a Bible verse." So the next day, here's the kid yelling, "Christ was born in the manger! Christ was born in the manger!" He said, "Oh, that's so much nicer." He went up to the little boy and said, "Oh, that's really nice. Do you know why Christ was born in the manger?" And the kid said, "Yes, we got all the apartments."
We were talking about true stories. We have five kids, and when our oldest were 3 and 4, two little boys, we lived out in southeastern Oregon where my husband had a parish in a little tiny town named Hines, and there was an empty field, a big field across the street from us. And they found a toad out there one day, and they were arguing about whose toad this was, who found the toad, and who was going to get to keep it. And this went on and on until I had just had it, and I went outside and I said, "You boys, you have to learn how to get along. Now, if Mama hears any more fighting about this, we're going to take it back in the field and let it go. You have to learn how to share." And so I said, "No more fighting, or we're going to let the toad go." So I didn't hear any more fighting, and I thought, well, they really got the message. So they came in for lunch, and I washed them up, and they were sitting eating their soup, and I said, "I'm really proud of you boys today. You learned how to share, didn't you?" And the three-year-old said, "Yeah, Mama, we took our toy shovel and divided it, and we each have half in a pocket."
Well, I'll tell one of my five-year-olds, and she would be embarrassed to hear it, but we spent last week at Bible school at our church, and because of the location of her room at Bible school, she had the occasion to go up and down some stairs to a place that she ordinarily hadn't gone in and out of. And there's a large, rather imposing wall plaque that takes up a good deal of space. It's a wooden plaque, and it's a memorial plaque, and it has a lot of small little gold engraved plaques that represent memorials with an individual's name and the date of their death, and of course it represents a substantial contribution to the life of the congregation. And she went past this a number of times going up and down these stairs, and finally the last day she said, "Mom, what are all those names on the wall there?" And before I could think of any appropriate way to reply and explain a memorial to someone who died, she said, "Oh, never mind, I know. Those are people's names, and those numbers under there, those have got to be their telephone numbers."
We were sitting at the dining room table, and the television was going in the other room, and it was the news and the stock market reports, and our then three-year-old was listening, and he came running, very excited, back in the dining room and said, "Dad, they sold 11 million chairs in New York!"
My grandson is at my house, and for breakfast I always have cooked oatmeal, and he didn't really care for that, so he went next door to the Grandma Pearl's and came home, and he said, "I had the most delicious breakfast." And I said, "Well, you did. What did you have?" "Well, it's called corn flakes."
It's like when I was married the first time, quite young, and a lot of times we had cars that didn't have radios in them. And my first husband was a musician, and he usually sang anytime we went anywhere. And there were three sons in there, and this song was out about father sang bass and mother sang tenor, and me and my brother joined right in there. So he was singing this as we were going along. And my youngest son popped up in the back seat and said, I want to sing tenor. So I said, "Oh, okay." So we all stopped, and he said, tenor.
Well, without stretching your imagination too far, what if you go to a party, and this is a rather unique party, and you're not to wear any clothes? How do you know which one is Ronald McDonald? He's the one with the sesame seed buns.
Ha 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 ha!
little boy, and he was riding around in his little red moped, you know, saving gas and all. Had this little red moped, he really loved red. And he came across this parking lot that had a cherry red Corvette. Now that was his two loves, red and a Corvette. So he just rode on and right parked his little red moped right on the side of his Corvette. And without even getting off, he just started adoring this thing and feeling it. And in the meantime, the owner came out of the store and he saw this kid rubbing his Corvette, and he got upset. So he went to the kid and said, "Little kid, get out of here!" And he pushed him, and he opened the door and went to get in, and the kid jumped in, and he got on there and said, "Wow, Corvette!" And he started feeling the steering wheels and, "Oh, leather seats!" And the guy was getting upset, so he took him and he threw him out the door, closed the door, and he took off, and the kid landed on his moped. And the guy's going down 20 miles an hour down the street saying, "Phew, boy, this kid is crazy." And he looks in his rearview mirror and he sees this kid following him on his little red moped. Damn. So he puts it in second, going down the road 35 miles an hour. He said, "Ah, this kid will be able to keep up with me now." And he looks, and there's a little kid following him on his moped. He shifts, he's going 55 miles an hour down the road, zoom! And he looks in his rearview mirror and there's this little kid in a moped. Oh no, my goodness, this kid's crazy! He goes, and he's going 100 miles an hour, zoom! And he looks and there's this little kid, zoom! And he hits a bump and the kid passes him, zoom! And then he passes the kid, zoom! And he's like, "Oh, what am I gonna do?" And in a panic, he turns and he crashes and he goes flying out of his car, boom! And a kid falls right inside of him, bang! And he said, "Little kid, you're crazy! You were going 100 miles an hour on a moped!" And the little kid said, "I know! My suspender was caught in your door!"
Coleman, yeah, so the stove.
I think we better try yet another one.
I have a good answer. I have a grandson who's been adopted, who's black. And his parents have always been concerned that he's going to run into a lot of racism someplace along his life. And one day at school they were playing ball and John made the mistake of hitting the ball a long way or something like that. And he came home to his mother crying, feeling terrible. Well, what in the world happened? What in the world happened? Well, you know, he said, this is pretty terrible. He said, the kids were so mad at me. Well, what did they do? They called me bad names. Well, what did they call you? You dirty Pollock. I have an oldie moldie I have to tell you about. And it's not a Norwegian story.
Hallelujah.
A long time ago, this took place probably in North Dakota, the Strostack story made me think of it. The end of the world was predicted. The end of the world was supposed to come on a certain day. And this one man was really concerned about it and thought, aha, I know how I'm going to fix that. I'm going to climb up on this haystack. That's about the highest thing around there. And so when the angels fly over, I'll just flap my wings and I'll just fly off with the angel. Well, he got up in his haystack and it was a hot day and pretty soon he went to sleep. I don't know how long he slept, but he woke up. In the meantime, some kids had gone by and they'd been playing with matches. And he set the haystack on fire. He looked around and saw all this smoke going around him. It was getting pretty warm. In hell, just as I expected.
Got one or two more?
Maybe we can close with the benediction one. We were talking about true stories. Our pastor told me this one. He was marrying a couple, and they hadn't had too much church connection, but anyway, everything seemed to run quite smoothly throughout the ceremony. At the conclusion, of course, he was to pronounce the benediction. So he just simply announced, bow your heads and receive the benediction, and then he raised his arms in the traditional blessing. And these couples, this couple, each of them, themselves also raised her arms even as he pronounced the benediction.
My husband was a pastor in this little tiny town in Beckerman, Minnesota. And I had three little kids to struggle with every Sunday morning in church, which was agony. And my middle one, a boy, was about 3 years old at the time, and an absolute pain to have in church. And on this particular Sunday, it was communion Sunday, and my husband was giving the bread, and then he decided for the first time in this congregation to have one of the councilmen help him. So he walked behind and was serving the wine. And my three-year-old shouted out so everyone heard, "Hey, Mom, who's that passing out the drinks?"
That reminds me of a couple of years ago at Holden, we had a presentation of the Augsburg Confession. And tomorrow night we'll have begin the Reformation festival service with a short pageant. In this presentation of the Augsburg Confession, Dan Erlander arranged for the different participants to be dressed up accordingly in the Village Center. And Mark Twain was the Pope. Mark Twain has a balcony above it all up there, above where the banner is now. Dressed out as a pope should be dressed. And Katie, who I think was 3, said, "Hi, Daddy!"
There's a true story that was about Lee Trevino, a golf story about, it was a couple of years ago when there was such great concern about new rules about what to do in case of lightning storm. And they asked, it was in Sports Illustrated, they asked Lee Trevino what he does, and he says, "Well, he just holds up a one iron up in the air," because he says, "Even God can't hit a one iron."
What do we do? Do we raise our arms for the benediction? Okay, we just raise our arms. See if we can get out the door then. All right.